Some readings are more encouraging than others sometimes, aren't they? So we'll see how we go. That was, I mean, that's no offence. I chose it, but just to be aware. Firstly, I just want to thank Dave and Janelle for having us here today. As Dave said, we've had the privilege of knowing each other for a long time. And, one of the great things I get the privilege of is I get the chance to go around Australia a little bit and meet with pastors and leaders as I meet some really great Christian leaders and pastors. And you guys have two of them in Dave and Janelle. And so we're really thankful for being here this morning. One of the things you need to know about me is I'm more sport orientated. You know, there's nothing wrong. I've got two children, two boys, adult boys now, but I've got two boys, and you know, one of them, he plays music professionally, and he's kind of, you know, arty's maybe the wrong word, but he's kind of more arty in that sort of space and that. And I've got another boy that just is sport mad, you know. For example, my wife is very musical and plays a bunch of instruments, although if I said that in front of her, she goes, "Oh, I don't really play them." Well, she plays them, you know. She might not play them at, you know, the highest level, but she plays them a number of instruments pretty well. And when I was younger, still at college actually, the church I was working for was struggling a bit with musos, and I thought, I'll learn to play bass. Now, I apologise to the bass players about what I'm going to say, but, you know, I kind of look at it and go, it sort of seems like the easiest one of the guitars to play, right? You know, you kind of go, there's only four strings, that seems easier, and you kind of just pluck them, and, you know, I don't have to remember chords and all this sort of stuff. And so I was learning the bass guitar, and there was one. Now, the thing I've got to just help you understand is my wife is profoundly gracious and very gentle, right? So she didn't mean what I took it to be. But like, I'm learning the bass, I'm trying to learn, I can't get it going. And eventually I say to my wife, who's never picked up the blooming bass guitar before in her life, right? And so she literally stands there and grabs it off. I say, "Can you show me? I'm trying to learn this thing." And she literally goes, "Oh, here it is." And I'm like, ah. And that was about the time I gave up playing the guitar. I just kind of realised at that point I'd really given it a go and she hadn't tried it all and was heaps better than me already, right? It's a bit like my older son. My mum had decided to take up ukulele. Right, and so she, you know, and so she's got these ukuleles, and my son sat there on YouTube when he was about 14 years old and taught himself to play ukulele, and by the end of one visit, he was better than my mother, right? So that's kind of my family, right? But what happens for me as a sport-orientated person is every 4 years, I become awesome at knowing everything about sports I know nothing about. Because the Olympics are on, right? And so all of a sudden, I watch the synchronized diving. And I know everything about it. Like, I'm like, you know, oh, they over-rotated on that one, or there was a bit too much splash. I think they're going to lose some points there. Or I watch archery. I just watch these sports that I know nothing about, but I'm still kind of captivated. And one of the things about playing sport and watching sport is you kind of get used to the whole coach's talk. You know, they give you the last-minute pep talk before you go out, or particularly the half-time talk. You know, you're sitting there and, you know, you're about to run back out on the field and the coach gathers you all around. And I used to play a lot of very competitive sport when I was young. I mean, I still play competitive sport now, but I played pretty decent level when I was a young bloke. And I went back to play baseball many, many years later, and the coach called us in, and I thought it was like, you know, grade sports. So I run in and I'm like, "Yes, coach, yes." And all the rest of the boys are laughing at me because it's like, we don't take it that serious, mate. But, you know, you're at halftime and the coach pulls you in and he gives you those last-minute instructions. Well, today in the other reading that we're going to kind of use to then bounce off the judges reading that we've done, it's Moses is like the coach, and he's giving his last minute instructions to his team before he's about to die. So that's the kind of context that the reading from Deuteronomy that we'll get to in a minute comes from. And so what we're going to do today is go, well, what's the coach's last minute instructions to us? What does that look like, and how do we go about that? And really what we're going to be talking about is having faith in us and allowing faith to go through us to those that come after us. And so that's primarily what we're going to look at. And as Dave said, you know, today's kind of the first in the whole Faith Runs Deep If we can put up the PowerPoint, please, if that's okay. Thank you so much. Is the first of the Faith Runs Deep kind of series that you will be going through. And as Dave is going to tell you in an email this week, because he told me it's ready to go, he just wanted to wait for the timing of it all. There's an email that's coming out that because the church signed up to it the way it did, there'll be a code that comes out, and it means you can watch all of the different Olive Tree Media series as well as Faith Runs Deep, and you can log in and do that sort of space. But if you've got a Bible and you read it as you go along, I always think it's good to bring a Bible to church, because if the sermon's boring, you've got something to read, right? Like, you know, let's be honest. Deuteronomy chapter 6 is the other passage that we'll be looking at, and then going back to the Judges passage towards the end of the sermon that was read to us this morning. So to have faith run deep in us and have faith run deep in a sense through us, the reading in Deuteronomy that I'm going to read to you in a second helps, gives us a couple of things that we're going to look at. And the first of these is simply this. To have faith run deep in us and through us is about firstly remembering his promises to us. I mean, unfortunately, as Christians, we're sometimes known for what we're against, not what we're for. Now, I understand why that happens and I get it, but equally, there's something about the scriptures and how they posture themselves that often God sets a vision, a purpose, a promise first, and then gives us some warnings, and that's kind of how this passage in Deuteronomy 6 works. And so to be part of that, we hold on to the promises that God has given us. And if you read with me from Deuteronomy 6, 1 to 3, it says it like this. These are the commands, the decrees, the laws the Lord your God has directed me to teach you and observe in the land you are crossing the Jordan to possess, so that you and your children and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live, by keeping all of his decrees and commands that I give you, and so that you may enjoy a long life. Hear, O Israel, and be careful to obey, so that all may go, so that it may go well with you, and you may increase greatly in the land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord your God and the God of your ancestors promised. So God starts this passage by giving us a vision of sort of what's coming, what is to come if we keep following him. And it's and he kind of, you've got to remember the context, what's been happening, you know, wandering around the desert, slavery before that, you know, there's all this sort of stuff that sits in the background, and they're kind of going, man, this following God's pretty hard, you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff that seems to be happening. And and in the middle of this section here, God starts with this vision. He says, well, I want to remind you of what is life like if you choose to follow me. If you choose to follow me, what life is like. And in this passage, he says things like, you will possess this land, you'll enjoy a long life, you may increase greatly, this land flowing with milk and honey, just as the Lord promises. And so in this passage, what God starts with is this vision, this promise of what it will look like if his people choose to follow him. Does that make sense? Yeah? And so that's how he kind of starts this passage. And in the New Testament, of course, it expands it even further. I mean, it says it in things like this in the New Testament, that you will... that the good shepherd will lay down his life for his sheep, and in return you will receive life to the full. And in, despite the ups and downs in this life, I mean, just pause for a minute and go, why does God make us promises about, why does God call us, sorry, in the scriptures to words like be strong and courageous? Why? Because he knows that we're going to face difficulty where we will need to be strong and courageous. Does that make sense? So in the same way, when God says, I will never leave you or forsake you, why does he make that promise to us? Because there will be times in our life that it is not self-evident that it's true. Has anybody been through those times? I have. I've been through those times when it feels like God is nowhere there. It feels like he's completely abandoned you. And you've got a choice. Do I believe what my experience tells me, or do I believe what the scriptures tell me and his promise to me? So there are these promises. And so despite the ups and downs of life, where sometimes we face great difficulty or whatever it happens to be, there is that promise. in John 14 that there is this Father's house that he's going to build for us. So there is this time coming when all things will be set right. And then in spite of all of that, one of my most favourite passages of the scripture is in Revelation, where it says that God at that time will wipe every tear from our eye. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. I know for some of you I'm young and for others of you I'm old. But the older I get, the more I look at a passage like that and I go, I just can't wait for that day. Now, this is only part of the vision that God gives us. He gives us a whole bunch of other stuff in other parts of the scriptures. But all I'm trying to say is God gives us these visions of what life is like in following him. These kind of visions that we go, wow, I want that, you know, I want that sort of life. And he gives us this vision to say, you want to join with me? Well, this is the kinds of things it's going to be like. Now, I think it's good for me to stop because, you know, my wife tells me I can rabbit on and you know, it's good to... And I just think one of the things about church life is it's actually that all the... Now, I'm sure you don't say it here, but all the wisdom and godliness in the life of the church is not based here. It's based in us as a community together, and you have so much to speak into it. And so what I want to do for a moment is simply get you to turn to somebody around you, just in ones or twos, and I want you to ask this question of each or say something to each other about one or two of God's promises that stand out for you. Now, there's heaps of promises, and I don't want, how do I say this nicely? I don't want the theologically correct. I don't want you to go, well, okay, the promise that I've got to say, because I'm meant to say it, is X. I just want you to go, what's one or two of them that just grab you and help you keep going through the ups and downs of life? Does that make sense? Okay, turn to somebody around you just for a minute. You're not going to have long, so just start sharing. Okay. Now, I know you could keep going for a while, and I know maybe some of you haven't had the full chance to share, and after the service you can keep doing that. We're a small enough group to just simply say, if there's one or if there, what's the thing that you shared in your group? If one or two or three of you would be prepared to just speak that out for us. What's the one thing of the promise that you hold on to and has been so significant for you?
Yep.
Go for it. Trusting God, yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? It's a really easy word to say and a really hard word to do. Yeah, thank you so much. Somebody else? He's always there. Yeah, it's a great word, isn't it? Someone else? Yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah, God chooses some leaders that I wouldn't choose, I'll tell you. Like, you know, just, yeah. But you're right, exactly. I mean, I've always thought that if I could have that written on my tombstone, you know, a man after God's own heart. Beautiful. One other maybe? I think you were both about to say the same thing, weren't you? It's like jinx, one of you can't speak now. But so all I'm trying to say is you've got something that helps spur you on. Okay? And that something could be used by you or through you to help spur somebody else on. Okay, so if that's this idea about remembering his promises, the second thing that comes out in the Deuteronomy 6 passage is this idea of sticking to the plan. My wife was born in India. She's an Anglo-Australian lady, but her parents were missionaries over there with the leprosy mission, and so she was born there and went to boarding school there for the first part of her life. And we went back... Not like before we had kids, 25 years ago or more, went back to India. We're walking around the streets and we wanted to, I'm embarrassed to say it publicly and I apologise, but we'd been in India for I think 3 weeks. We'd eaten Indian food the entire time. We had stayed with locals because it was family, friends and all that sort of stuff. So we'd really immersed ourselves. My wife and I caught the bus, and if you've ever travelled to India, no kind of tourist white people catch the bus because that's like, you know, that's the locals. So you're sitting there and it's like the movies. There's people everywhere. Anyway, the last night we were in India, we just wanted some Western food. and I'd seen this sign from McDonald's, right? And I'm embarrassed to say that I'm in India with the best curry going around, but I just wanted to, anyway. So we decide to go out looking for this McDonald's, and we're walking around the street, and a lot of people, if you go to some different countries, they want to practice their English with you, and so they're quite happy to chat to you, you know. And I'm chatting to this person. I said, "Oh, look, we want to go to the McDonald's," and we're explaining it in broken, kind of this broken conversation. And now, what you've got to understand is there's certain cultures where saving face is really important, right? And it's not, so it's not a criticism what I'm about to say. It's just a cultural thing that they don't want to say no to you, and they don't want to show you that they don't know. So when I say, "Can you tell us where the McDonald's is?" This guy goes, yeah, no worries. It's down there. Yeah, it's like, he didn't quite say it like this, but it's like you hook a right, a third on the left, and you go down there, and it's down there, right? So we go down there. It's nowhere near there. It's nowhere, like, it's just absolutely nowhere near there. See, the point is this. If you don't have the right plan or directions, even if you know where you want to go, it's really hard to get there. Does that make sense? So let's read the second part of this passage from Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 9. And it says it like this. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And these commandments that I give to you today are be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and your gates." See, God gives them a plan. So he doesn't just give them a vision, this is what it could be like, but he also goes, here's the roadmap to help you get there. And what does he say? He says two very simple things that I think everybody can do. And the first is, love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your mind and all your strength. So the first is, who remembers this quote? You might have heard it in various forms from St. Augustine. It basically says, love God and do whatever you please. For the heart, for the soul trained in love to God will do nothing to offend the one who is beloved. In other words, the more that we love God, the more that we want to do what he says. So in other words, it no longer becomes, I have to, I've got to beat myself. It's like, well, I want to. When we got married, my wife had a sheet underneath the doona and I didn't. And I thought it was so frustrating to have a sheet under the doona. Like, it was stupid. Why do I have a doona if I've got a sheet underneath it? And now all of a sudden I can't sleep without a sheet under the doona. She wins. I mean, she always wins, let's be honest. But it's this point of, what does God say is the roadmap to helping faith in us and through us? And the first point is simply, just keep loving God. I don't know about you, there's a whole bunch of stuff about God that I don't understand. I have questions, doubts. But when I look at Jesus on the cross and I hear him say, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." Somehow in that moment, I can look at him on the cross and somehow it's okay. Just love God. Just love him. And the second thing it says is about, in this reading, it talks about impressing faith to your children. But implication is impressing faith to those that are around us. And he says, well, you just do it doing the normal stuff. You know, you do it when you're walking along the road and you're at bed at night. You just kind of, in the normal goings and comings of life, just have some opportunities to share your faith in really natural and normal kind of ways. In other words, events like Thursday night are great, but they're not the only way to share faith. They're not the main way to share faith, really, ultimately. The main way to share faith is just as you're walking along the road with your friends, with neighbours. Now, so for some of us, that will involve going overseas. Some of us, that will involve crossing cultural barriers and all those sorts of things. But at the very least, just share faith in the normal, actual, everyday way of life. I mean, in the New Testament, it uses phrases like this. It says, God will make us fishers of men, and don't worry about what to say. The Holy Spirit will speak through you, and you'll be my witnesses to the end of the earth. And etc. And even it says in Matthew 28, and this is a passage all of us would know really well, you know, therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son. You know that passage, yeah? The problem with English is it doesn't always capture Greek. Now, I'm a bit like Dave. I barely got through my languages at theological college. It's so much easier today with computers and, you know, word things on it and all that sort of stuff. But what I do know is that I can remember the first set of parsing rules in Greek, but I couldn't even tell you what they mean now. But what I do know is this, that when it says go and make disciples, it seems really, it feels like it's a, well, I'm going to go over there, I'm going to go there, and I'm going to make disciples. But the word is actually basically in your going or as you go. In other words, as you go along the road of life, make disciples. In the ordinariness of going to the shops or working in an office or at home with your family, you know, in the ordinary going of our lives, love God and share faith. And so, I mean, I'm not going to stop for it now for timing, but I maybe just to ask you to think about the question, what makes loving God or sharing faith hard? Now, you'll all have your own answers for that. But I encourage you to ponder what makes it hard and how could you overcome it? Because that's... And lastly, there is this thing about heeding the warning. God has this magnificent picture of where we're going. And he has this easy, really, plan of how to get there. But then at the very end, he gives us a warning, and he says it like this. He says, when the Lord your God brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, etc., this land that's flowing and, you know, flourishing cities you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things you did not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyards and olive groves you did not plant, then you will eat and are satisfied. Be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. At the end of the kind of the vision and the plan is this warning. And God says, but be careful that you don't forget. In Joshua 4, it talks about these memorial stones. Do you remember that whole passage where it talked about memorial stones? And I think do I have it on the next one? Yeah, Joshua 4. And in it, there's this encounter of them crossing the Jordan into the promised land, and they get these rocks and they take them to the other side. Do you remember this story? And they take them to the other side and they build this altar there, etc. And so the whole point of that story is to say, why are we doing this? Why are we building these memorial stones? Why are we sharing faith? So that in the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? You say, well, let me tell you about this God that we follow. Let me just tell you about this God that we follow. See, these memorial stones were there to pass on faith to the generations that would come after us. The warning in Deuteronomy 6 was there to pass on faith. And the reading that we started with this morning, and I won't read it all, but out of Joshua says, after a whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, another generation grew up that neither knew the Lord or what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. The profoundly scary thing is this. It took one generation of not passing on faith for it to be lost. One generation. And it was gone. Now, the judges came, you know, I'm not saying it was gone forever, but do you understand what I'm trying to say? One generation and it was done. So we're going to be watching Faith Runs Deep as church over the coming time. And I've got a clip that we're going to show you from some of week one's episode, just to give you a little bit of a taste of what that clip is like. So if we press play on that, that'd be great.
The significance of faith in families for the church in Australia should never be underestimated.
For me, I think for faith to run deep in Australia, it starts in families.
It's in our house, when we first moved to our house, it was really small. There was hardly any space. You know, there's five of us in this small house. And I used to do a quiet time every morning in the sunroom. It would have to have been, on the Richter scale of usefulness of a quiet time, it would have been about 2 out of 10. Like, the kids are running in and out, you know, there's noise, it's all. But I wanted my kids to see me reading the Bible myself, not just when I'm at church, but we say grace every meal. We prayed with the kids whenever we could. We hope that it just became ingrained in the life, in our family life.
For us, for Carl and I, it was just so important that our kids had friends in the church of other Christian families. They had Sunday school leaders, they had youth group leaders that would mentor them.
Towards the end of my time of running a local church, my daughter, who was then, you know, probably in her early to mid-20s, was doing a talk and I was there. And she said, you know, we always got a choice about going to church every Sunday. My parents gave us a choice. The choice was you can go in the morning or you can go in the evening.
You know, I had to wait till I was 17 till I actually understood the gospel. So that's, you know, 17 years of just being in Sunday school and youth group and never really making it personal.
My hope for my kids and my grandchildren is that they'll have personal faith. So that's my hope for the generations to come, that there would be a sense of a warm legacy of faith and belief and trust. Anyone who wants to understand New South Wales history, and Australia therefore history, properly needs to realise the influence not just of the humanitarians inspired by the Enlightenment, but the influence of evangelical Christians.
Those who organised transportation in the first place sincerely believed that if we're going to improve the lives of convicts and if Australia is going to be a kind of a successful experiment in rehabilitation, you need Christianity, you need religion. So in that respect, it was sort of built into the constitution of exactly what we were doing in the Australian experiment to begin with.
We benefited from the people that came as soldiers, convicts, government officials and free settlers. We benefited because with those groups of people came evangelical Christians committed to the mission of Christ, committed to building a nation with those evangelical commitments reflected in the institutions of our land.
Around the time of Federation, around about 94 or 96% of Australians identify as Christian. Church attendance is very, very high, and things are basically like that right up to the 1960s. You just can't understand the Australian psyche up until actually quite recently without understanding that people genuinely believed that Christianity is true, that it is good not just for them as individuals, it's good for their families, it's good for society as a whole.
There was this notion that Australia was settled like as a secular nation, the cast-offs of England, and therefore were never Christian. What does the census back in, say, 100 years ago tell you about what people thought about Christianity?
Well, it was not only the dominant religion, it was almost wholesale the identification that people had. And so it was well above 95%. In the first census, around 96%. The rest just had no belief. But we were a Christian nation almost wholly. And it was part of the cultural identity as well. Yep. As I've said, with the current data, the cultural identity has been evaporating. It doesn't mean to be Australian is to be Christian anymore, but certainly that was the founding reality, and a century ago, that was the dominant.
So that just gives you, you know, a little bit of, of a touch of what's going on. If we just put that slideshow back to where it was, if that's okay for a minute. Thank you so much, if that's a possibility. Okay, so here's what I want to do. I want to finish with this. you'll be able to watch that, you'll be able to be encouraged, you'll be able to get some testimonies of faith, some memorial stones that will help you in sharing faith to others and all of those sorts of things. To be aware of that, that would be great. What I want to do is I want to finish this because I think, I want to finish this way, because I think for a lot of Christians, thank you so much for that. I think for a lot of Christians, there's over the last probably 10 years, there's a bit of a crisis of confidence about our faith. We have been sort of seemingly belittled and shoved in a bit of a corner. But what I want to say to you is there's something happening across Western nations, across the globe, that seems to be making a bit of a shift. And I can't go into all of that now, and I clearly don't have time. But what I want to say to you is this. I want to give you a bit of an understanding. McCrindle, who you saw interviewed there, did a research thing a few years ago now. And it was essentially 90% of people in Australia knew a Christian person. Now, they're identifying that person as a Christian. You know, we might go, oh, they don't go to church much or whatever. Yeah, but they identified Bill or Mary or their friend as a Christian. Does that make sense? 90%. Those people were then asked, explain that or describe that Christian to me. And as you can see, the top responses were caring, kind, honest, loving, and generous. And the bottom ones were intolerant, insensitive, authoritarian, exclusive, and rude. So what that tells us is, now if you said to them, what do you think of the church? Or what do you think of Christians in general? That may not be their answer. But when they're asked, what about Bill or Mary or Sally or whatever it happens to be, what about this person of Christian faith that you know, that primarily they are described in positive terms? So here's what I want to say to you. We think sometimes that everybody hates us because we're Christians. Now, they might not like everything about us. They might not like what we believe. They might, you know, there's all of that stuff there. But all I'm trying to say is this, that 90% of people know a Christian and actually think they're a pretty decent human being. Now, I'm not sure that's what the media tells us. And I want you to hear that because I actually think there's a whole bunch of people in our society that don't think of us as negatively as we think of ourselves, as we think they think of us. It's a really complicated way to say it, but do you understand what I'm trying to say? So then to go on from that, in 2022, there was a survey done surveying non-Christian people, right? And what they said is, would you go to a service at Easter time next year? This was in December 2022. Would you go to a service next year with the Christian person that you know? Okay? So in other words, Mary, Bill, Sally, that they think is a decent human being and kind and loving and caring, mostly, would you go to church with them at Easter next year? And 42% of people said yes. 42% of non-Christian people said yes. And another 19% said maybe. Now, that tells us that 60% of Australians are more open to an invitation around something around the gospel than we think it is. 60%. 6 in 10 are at least warm to an invitation, warm to some kind of conversation. Now, not all of those will get everywhere. Not all of them will, all that sort of stuff. What I'm trying to say is this. I want you to be encouraged and emboldened because you see these testimonies of faith in Faith Runs Deep. I want you to be encouraged and emboldened because we have a vision, we have a plan, and we have a warning. But I also want you to be emboldened because actually there's a whole bunch of people that we live amongst that are far less close to something about the gospel than we think they are. There's a group called BDC, Building a Discipling Culture, and they do this thing around inviting people to read the scriptures. Now, I'm going to butcher it because I've got no time. But essentially they do this. Pray about friends, all your friends, and try and find three people of peace. And there's ways that they do that, which is essentially people that you think might be open to the gospel. I can explain more of it after if you want. Anyway, so you pray about your mates or friends. You pick these three people that you kind of feel are more open to the gospel. And there's some ways that they help you do that. And then literally you just ask them to read the Bible with you once a week. Now, they've been doing this for a while. This is Australian-based. They say 1 in 3 says yes. One in three non-Christian people that you know, or not, sorry, not one in three that you know, one in three that you kind of then whittle down from to the three, one in three of those say, yeah, I'll read the Bible with you. And the other two are okay about saying, no, thanks, but we're still mates. I just think there's more openness than we think there is. And so faith in us and faith through us, so that nobody can say about us, there was a generation that grew up that neither knew the Lord nor what he had done. How about a prayer as Janelle comes up to, I think we've got one song to finish, have we? No? Yeah, I'll just pray as you guys come up. And yep. Jesus, thank you so much for what you're doing in us and what you're doing through us. We continue to pray blessing on this church, for Pastor Dave as he does his role in it, but for everybody else as we do our role in it too. And we pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.